Thank you for listening to the Content Magazine podcast, Conversations with Silicon Valley's Creatives. I'm Daniel Garcia, your host and the cultivator of Content Magazine, published by SV Creates.
All right. Welcome to the Content Magazine podcast. I'm today's host, David Valdespino, the developer of Content Magazine. Today we are sitting with Steven Nguyen from Good Time Bar. We're here to kind of talk about a one-year anniversary that y'all have coming up, but more importantly, you and kind of the folks behind Good Time. Sure. Maybe we could start with like an introduction to what Good Time Wine Bar in Fountain Alley, downtown San Jose, is.
Wow. How do I put that sort of in a nutshell? Yeah. I think first and foremost, it's a natural wine bar focused on low intervention wines that are made with, you know, a lot of care and thought, mm-hmm. highlighting producers that, I think particularly as of late, particularly in California, but also around the world, sort of having a space in the South Bay, which has been a void personally for a long time, you know, a person that was previously to opening up Good Time, really seeking natural wine, but not being able to sort of source it locally. Mm-hmm. Hoping it was a destination for folks to come and be able to access a product that I've really fell in love with and I'm very enthusiastic about sharing with other people.
Yeah.
Second to third levels of sort of, you know, what we are and what we have become, you know, have even surprised me to this day. You know, it's a place now for extremely good food,
yeah.
that I think, I knew would be something that we wanted to focus on early on,
yeah.
and sort of provide really nice, good staple food that really paired well with the wines that we were serving. But as over time with Chef Alex in the kitchen,
yeah.
The program has sort of evolved into, you know, more than I think I could have imagined the day we opened. And so on a lot of days, people think we're a restaurant, too,
yeah.
which is fantastic in its own right, but then causes, you know, other challenges that I've also learned over the past year.
Yeah.
But it's also now been sort of a place for communal gathering.
Yeah.
You're part of our run club, as you
I
can
am.
Imagine. Those are sort of things that we always try to think about in terms of creating a space at the bar where, you know, even if you don't drink natural wine or if you don't, you know, particularly want to come and eat our food,
yeah.
there's, you know, comedy, there's art, there's music,
yeah.
there's exercise where you can come and just sort of hang out, you
and
know?
That's and, yeah. kind of like an important part of that location, right?
Yeah.
Because it's in Fountain Alley on 2nd Street.
Formerly known as other things.
Formerly known as other things. Doing a little research, I learned a lot more. But what was that kind of like, taking on a space like that? Because previously there's like Scratch Cookery right next door that had
yeah.
kind of already been open for a short amount of time. And then you moved in. So, I mean, there's a certain amount of community building that kind of has to be done when you're kind of moving into that part of town, right?
Sure. I get asked that question a lot, and, you know, so why was it Fountain Alley?
Yeah.
You know, I'll be honest, like, it wasn't the first place we had looked. One, because at the time when I was looking extensively, it wasn't on the market.
Yeah.
So there wasn't a space there to be leased. I had looked around some sort of periphery sort of locations around the block, you know, kind of near Pizza Flora at the time was still in business, but where Egghead was, for an example, was open. So I had looked at some of those properties. I had focused a lot sort of in the San Pedro Square area and then the Alameda as an example.
Mm-hmm.
The Alameda has always, you know, been a place where I thought was a little bit more of the vibe that we ultimately wanted.
Totally.
You know, it just became sort of this drawn out process to try to find a place.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, the spot at Fountain Alley came up sort of through some connections. You know, I have a lot of friends that own businesses downtown, and they let me know that that space was going to be available soon. And I had heard a lot of good things about Jeff and Gary, who sort of owned that building and sort of adjacent properties around the area.
Totally.
You know, and it was sort of this sort of serendipitous moment, kind of connected them real quick, felt very good about the relationship and like what they were trying to strive to do for downtown. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it became a very sort of comfortable and sort of seamless transaction, which is the best thing you could ask for. Totally. In terms of leasing a space, you know?
Yeah.
And so I knew, being born and raised in San Jose, you know, my whole life, I frequented that alley, you know, in my youth. And I kind of know generally sort of the unsavory parts around, you know, that alley at night. And but I saw a lot of opportunity,
yeah,
just around the space and how kind of had, you know, somewhat historical significance to some people. And mm-hmm. It being this sort of common breezeway between, you know, First and Second Street.
Yep.
And on a nice day, it always felt like a great place to be.
Totally.
So when we took it over, it was still in bad shape. You know, folks maybe remember looking back to sort of the end of the pandemic where that alley was still closed.
Yeah.
And so when I signed the lease, it was sort of well knowing that it might be closed still. We actually, you know, pushed, you know, Jeff and Gary to help us open it. And they obliged and were very, you know, supportive in sort of getting that alley activated again, which has been great.
Yeah.
But you know, it was sort of a calculated risk to some degree because, you know, even this day, a lot of people ask me because they're like, why here? You know,
yeah.
Because if they're not used to downtown, they're not from here, it may not always look like the most inviting place, particularly if, you know, Scratch and you know, and us aren't open at the same time.
For sure. For
you know,
sure.
On a Sunday afternoon, it looks great. But on a Monday or a Tuesday when sort of each of us are only open, it can still look, you know, quite dead
sometimes. But in some ways, it kind of brings back that downtown feel to downtown, right?
Sure.
I feel like, you know, a lot of the articles that I've read and some other stuff going on there, right? Like those kind of small businesses that are activating. And I mean, it's right next to the light rail.
Yeah.
Like nothing's cooler than like running straight into downtown during Run Club on Monday nights,
sure.
Right? And then you kind of like pace your way out to like the farther stretches of downtown. But yeah, I mean, do you kind of have like a broader vision of downtown yourself as like a business owner, right? Or like things that you would like to see? Or are you trying to like kind of be the change that you'd like to see for the downtown? Or
that's a great question. I think my perception and thought of downtown has obviously changed even more so now as a business owner. Like
yeah.
I said, I've been downtown my whole life, just mm-hmm. in and out. You know, I've lived nearby on several occasions. Once you own a business and you're here every day, the lens is different than coming down here once a week even.
For sure.
You know, when you're here many hours a day during the morning hours, evening, night times, you can kind of see sort of the change the city goes through sort of hour by hour.
Yeah.
You know, from it's very different after 10 p.m. downtown, mm-hmm. as an example, you know, as opposed to right now. And so, you know, I continue to be hopeful for sort of downtown businesses, as are many people that are venturing out and opening businesses. I mean, if you don't have conviction in a project, it's quite foolish to open up a business in downtown, right? Just particularly if, you know, you're investing a significant amount of capital in doing it. And
yeah.
So, you know, the sort of sideways truth to that answer is like, you know, it was very easy for me to go and potentially open up, you know, I had looked at a time to open up in Mountain View.
Yeah.
On Castro, open up in Campbell,
mm-hmm.
Sunnyvale, sort of where sort of the prospects of sort of making revenue and making money was probably a lot easier,
yeah.
You know, but again, being from San Jose, I felt some, in a weird way, compelled
yeah.
to open a business in downtown San Jose.
Yeah.
Even though I was advised by many friends and some business owners that it's not a great idea.
Yeah.
You know, and I sort of went against a lot of that, and we did it anyways. So I am hopeful for it. In the last 11 months, you know, has that wavered? Maybe some days, you know, because, you know, if I walk out and, like, somebody stole my planners and for no reason, because I know they don't need planners on wheels anywhere downtown.
Yeah.
It's disheartening at times, but, you know, I've learned some of it comes with the territory, you
totally.
Know, and that's sort of the cost of operating business in a downtown space. Having talked to, again, other friends and business owners in other parts of the Bay Area,
mm-hmm.
I think San Jose, you know, sort of knock on wood, is still much safer and much easier to run a business than other parts of the North Bay.
Yeah.
And so I feel very happy about that. And, you know, I'm excited for the next year. And
yeah.
I'm excited to see new businesses still wanting to take the risk, you know. And I think it takes, you know, sort of that entrepreneurialism for folks to sort of take risk and invest in downtown. I see institutional money coming in, which is always a good sign. But I think you need folks that are creative, too, that are willing to do things that, you know, may not work, but
yeah.
sort of have a vision, you know. And like when I talked about, like, nobody thought that people would want to drink natural wine in downtown San Jose,
yeah.
right? Because it just was something people just weren't familiar with. And,
mm-hmm.
and there's always a risk if you open something, are people going to show up,
yeah.
you know? And we sort of took that risk. And so far, it's been paying off,
well,
which is great.
You know, tagging on to kind of risk and opening a business, I mean, this isn't, you haven't been a lifelong restaurateur, right? You haven't opened multiple wine bars in different locations.
Yeah.
Prior to this, you were working in tech, right?
That's correct.
So you worked at, you know, Apple and other Silicon Valley type tech businesses.
Sure.
And so, you know, some of the stuff I read was, you know, during COVID-19, during the pandemic, there was kind of this wave of like the great resignation, right?
Sure.
Or like people that were leaving tech jobs.
Yeah.
And there's a certain amount of risk that comes from leaving that space, which is presumably fairly safe if you're good at it and like, you know, you can do the job. But
sure.
I mean, safe is
yeah.
relative. I'm sure a lot of people got out before.
Yeah.
Before the wave came anyway, but can you kind of talk about your time in tech and like
sure.
and what kind of led you to that portion of deciding to leave it behind?
Yeah, you know, I think it's not uncommon, particularly in the Bay Area, for sort of second generation Asian Americans or other people that have families that immigrated here
yeah.
to sort of focus on you know, building a career here. You always hear the stereotype is like, you know, if you're like Asian, you gotta become a doctor or you gotta become an engineer, right? And
mm-hmm.
so I probably wasn't good enough to be a doctor, so I decided I should be an engineer. And so, you know, that was sort of what I had in a lot of like my thought space growing up.
Yeah.
You know?
It was kind of like
the natural thing, you know. I like to problem solve, sort of the engineering track. I enjoyed problem solving. I enjoyed sort of tinkering with things, and so it's sort of in a way felt natural
yeah.
too for me to get into that space. My dad was sort of in tech as well in his career here,
okay.
and sort of more a little bit on the hardware side, but. Anyways,
and so what was kind of your specialty at these, you know, different tech companies that you worked at? Like, what was your title? What were you kind of doing?
So it was around reliability engineering
okay.
for the most part. So it was sort of helping large distributed systems run efficiently.
And was that like more like software coding type stuff, or was it kind of more like?
So it was half-half. So
okay.
it was definitely it wasn't like full-blown engineering where you're writing software all day.
Yeah.
But it was definitely closely tied to that writing software to sort of optimize the systems that we were trying to run.
Yeah.
Right? And then also making sure that these systems were running efficiently, managing the sort of hardware infrastructure fleet around them as well.
So pretty pretty transferable among different kind of tech companies and sectors type.
Sure,
type
definitely, you know, an area that is in high demand because it's sort of a jack of all trades sort of situation. You know what I mean? Where you kind of need to know infrastructure, servers, layout, need to know redundancy and like failover scenarios. Like if a data center goes out, how do you transfer services over? But then you're also, you know, writing software to understand how do you optimize your services? How do you do more with less, right? Like the problem at scale with any company is that it's very difficult to just throw bodies at a problem, right? Particularly when you get to, you know, very techies people, when you're talking about things in terms of like, you know, thousands of servers or you know, many gigabits per second of traffic as an example, right? When you're dealing with things at that scale, you need to optimize for sort of performance and reliability.
Totally.
And, you know, having three people versus six people doesn't necessarily make the problem easier.
For
you have to engineer solutions around it. So, yeah, it was definitely an interesting career for sure.
And you were in that field for, you know, 10 plus years.
Yeah. I think I kind of lose track, but it was something about 15 or 16 years.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit more.
And was that something that you studied? You went to college, university for that kind of thing?
I went to San Jose State.
Awesome. So, another plug. Yeah.
Again, another product of sort of the downtown space. I've spent many years downtown itself. But yeah, you know, I kind of studied that in school and then kind of got a job right off the bat, you know. Probably it wasn't the ideal job at first, but, you know, I kind of hopped around. Sort of my maybe big first gig was at eBay.
Yeah.
Which, ironically enough, you know, at the time was a cool company to work at and sort of one of the best experiences I'd ever had. And then, you know, eBay as a company probably sort of, you know, not wavered a bit, but was kind of one of those companies that was just there, nobody thought about. But I feel like, interestingly enough, in the last couple of years, have really done a fantastic job sort of rebranding themselves as another place to find not just like old vintage antique stuff, but really like if you're seeking clothing, like, you know, if I'm like, if you're really into like streetwear or shoes, they've really done a good job around sort of transferring the marketplace to make it a safer experience for users. So anyways, side plug for my appreciation of eBay as a company now. But after that, you know, I did a startup for a little bit, was in the city. Fantastic experience, learned a lot there. Definitely had to do everything. And then, you know, ended up sort of had a family, needed to be back in the South Bay, and so spent time and came back to Apple.
So you came back to San Jose, you have your family, you know, wind the clock forward to, you know, 2020, COVID. So how did that kind of go for you? I mean, you had more time at home, you're spending time with your family, I imagine a little bit more among the...
Ironically not. I think that was sort of the problem. It was a time where, you know, I think a lot of people resonate with this time during the pandemic where because you were at home more and you were very accessible to a computer, the amount of work was increasing. You know, it was very easy to roll out of bed and, like, get on a WebEx call. It was very easy to you know, have 5 p.m. meetings because you no longer had to commute. And so... So yeah, ironically, you know, the pandemic made, at least personally for my story, is like work was, I ended up working even more. And ironically, was spending less time with the family because it was, I didn't have that moment where a lot of people do. A lot of parents in tech or, you know, they sort of have 9-to-5 jobs. When we were having to leave to pick up our children, it was very, everyone understood. you know, and kids get out at 3, like, everyone's got, you know, the parents got to go.
Yep.
We'll have meetings after or before, whatnot. But with the pandemic, it just became very easy. Everything just kind of, like, rolled into, like, one big blob of a day, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you know, it did get to a point where I was just definitely getting burnt out,
totally.
You know, and natural wine has always been this sort of hobby that I had found through traveling. And as I met more people, particularly locally, that were making natural wine, you know, they became friends and people that I enjoyed associating with.
Yeah.
But it was always like a hobby thing.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of tech people have hobbies. You know? It's like, that seems to be at least very prevalent in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
You know,
work like, hard, play hard. Yeah.
Exactly. So natural wine was always something that was fun, interesting on the side.
Mm-hmm. And that was like through travel internationally, right? Like,
correct.
I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I the first time I tell the story to people when they ask, but I had sort of discovered natural wine in Portugal.
Okay.
My wife and I were traveling with the kids, and we had sort of stumbled into this wine bar at the time that I didn't know was natural.
Yeah.
Had met the owners. They were expats from Montreal.
Okay.
That had relocated to Lisbon.
Yeah.
Opened up a little small bistro. Great food, husband and wife couple, you know, fantastic to hang out with. But I drank the wines, and it was sort of this first moment where, you know, maybe not unlike other people that come to our bar.
Yeah.
Taste the wine and are like, whoa, what is this? And it was a very positive experience for me. And
yeah.
I think it sort of led me down this rabbit hole of like, what is natural wine? How do I find it?
You
know? And so it became more of this like side hobby once I came back to the States, something I always enjoyed and was trying to seek out. But really not too much more of it, really. And sort of into the height of the pandemic when I thought about, is this something I continued to want to do, you know?
And it wasn't
many
like
more things led to the idea of doing it.
And it wasn't quite like the situation where you were going home and, you know, making wine in your garage or anything at that point. Like, you were more interested in the spaces and like the people that had their, you know, that was like their business. Like, that was the bringing you different varieties. And
it was the
try.
People, you know, it was the ethos around people that were making natural wine and drinking natural wine and just the whole environment.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that really attracted me to it. Never even in tech, I would never have time to make wine, even at least with the type of job I was having. But
mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was always a group of it was always a space I really enjoyed being around.
Okay.
And the people and how they were treating each other. They treated me, even though I came out, you know, really as an outsider.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't come from wine. I don't come from winemaking, and so but everyone I've met has been really welcoming and continue to this day, and so it's been a real fun space to be in.
Cool.
Yeah
excited to have you there and have you interested, right? I mean, for something that's a little bit different. Well, I guess I'm curious, as somebody that now owns a wine bar with, you know, the restaurant component to it, what was your relationship with like dining and food like growing up? Or like, you know, because obviously when you tapped into going to that restaurant in Portugal, right, like it tapped into something that you enjoyed, right? So like what are some memories that you have growing up with kind of food and drink?
I mean, you know, so I'm second generation Vietnamese.
Mm-hmm.
I was born here. My parents came over, I forget the years, but it's early 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been here for quite a while as well. My mom was, you know, fantastic homemaker, cooked a lot. So grew up eating a lot of traditional Vietnamese food. But, you know, again, my mom, you know, having been here for a long time, definitely try to help us assimilate with things. And she would cook spaghetti and, you know, sort of the whole bit.
Yeah.
So grew up with a lot of food,
mm-hmm.
Ate a lot. Again, sounds very cliche for the Bay Area, but yeah, everyone thinks they're like a foodie. But, you know, I don't claim to be a foodie. I enjoy eating, you know, lots of different types of foods and cuisines.
Yeah.
And so food has always been a big part of my life and sort of our family, mm-hmm. you know? And so even though we wanted to open the natural wine bar, we knew food was supposed to be a big component of it. Whether, and when I say big component, didn't need to be like a ton of dishes.
Yeah.
You know, our menu now is sort of a natural evolution of what's been happening. But, you know, early on, folks may remember, like, our, you know, if we look back to last April, like, mm-hmm. our menu was probably 6 or 8 items.
Yeah.
You know, we're teetering on, like, 18 on some weeks now, you know, which is amazing for the kitchen to be able to pump out. But,
yeah.
you know, we really wanted to focus on sort of a handful of really high-quality dishes that paired well with wine and that, you know, was just really thoughtfully curated,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so that continues to be things that we talk about,
yeah,
you know?
Totally.
We were just talking about a new dish this morning that's actually going on today as an example. So, you know, food is a constant evolution at Good Time.
Yeah.
You know, what we're serving, you know, we try to be very seasonal. Alex is always at the farmer's market trying to see what's in season.
Totally.
Spring's coming up, like, you know, it's gonna be a wonderful time.
And so far as Chef Alex goes, it's Alex Whiteman. So he's San Jose native.
He is.
Also spent time in New York, spent time working at other restaurants, studied culinary also.
Yes.
So how did y'all get connected?
You know, it's funny, I can't entirely remember anymore. I think he probably messaged me on Instagram or
okay.
something like that. So I think we had posted a teaser picture at one point on our very nascent account around mm-hmm. like getting keys to the to the blue building,
okay.
you know, and then he just messaged us. You know, I think this was well early on. This was probably a good 6 or 8 months before we even broke ground for construction.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
you know, we sort of kept in touch. And then as we were getting closer to opening the space, we sort of sat down and had a conversation, and sort of the rest is history. You know?
Yeah.
He's been fantastic for the program and for the space. He really understands, you know, things that that I'm looking for and that, you know, my wife Anne is looking for. And so it's a real collaboration effort.
Yeah.
You know, I try to give him sort of ultimate creative freedom. But he's oftentimes, you know, coming to us for feedback and, you know, kind of making sure what he's putting out is things that we're interested in as well. And so it becomes a real sort of strong collaboration between
yeah.
the three of us in terms of what goes on.
So before he reached out to you, what was kind of your vision for food at the wine bar?
I was just going to make everything myself in the back. But that's actually not too far off the truth. I mean, I think a lot of the things we were thinking about were, like, things that we personally enjoy eating. Like, folks may remember, like, the fennel salad
yeah.
that is on. Has been on there pretty much all year. And we'll come back at one point, I think.
Mm-hmm.
We took it off for a little bit so we can try to, you know, push other dishes on the menu. But, you know, those were dishes that I think are layered in flavor but aren't insanely difficult to prepare.
Yeah.
And so, you know, some of the initial thought was to sort of have a bit more of a streamlined, you know, food program, or, you know, reach out to someone else locally that was interested in a sort of new space for creativity.
Yeah.
Luckily, a lot of those conversations didn't have to happen.
Yeah.
We found Alex, and that was sort of, you know, the rest is history, people say.
Kind of a testament to that. You know, despite the warnings and the risk, and like a lot of people are kind of waiting for somebody to do it, right? Because there's definitely a taste and there's definitely like an interest in people to like support
yeah.
and like be a part of.
Yeah.
But you kind of just have to like lead the way and to some extent, right?
That's what we're finding, you know, and I knew sort of deep down there's a lot of people like myself
yeah.
that live in the South Bay for whatever reason, right? I'm not saying it's, but you know, everyone always associates people that want this type of food and this creative space
mm-hmm.
to be living elsewhere, yeah, like in the East Bay or the North Bay. But that's not true. Like, you, either you're, maybe you work down here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you have family down here. You have ties that sort of require you to be down here. Maybe you just really love it down here.
Yeah.
But you have a taste for, you know, typically the spaces and the food and the drink that's provided in the North Bay.
Yeah.
And it's just not available down here. And, you know, that I saw that in myself for a long time. I still do frequent the North Bay and Oakland, you know, when I want to try just different restaurants and things like that. But there's definitely demand down here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like you said, I think it just takes people willing to have conviction around a product. I think that's the biggest thing that I see sometimes is lacking, because mm-hmm. I think when you're really focused on like profit margins, you know, and like I understand, like, to stay open, like, you need to be able to turn a profit. Otherwise, yeah, it's just this like negative spiral, right?
Yeah.
And then you end up with more empty spaces, and I understand that. But I think, you know, really having conviction about your product, mm-hmm. and really sort of doubling down on what you're trying to do is one of the keys, at least to me, in being successful.
Yeah.
In a business.
So kind of, I mean, that same concept of like, there's a taste for it, people will come, and like the community aspect of what you enjoy about the restaurants that you've experienced. In the same way I asked you, like, what was your relationship with food? What's your relationship with community kind of growing up? Like, were you in clubs? Were you in like band or sports or anything like that growing up?
No, I think I'm an extremely large introvert.
Okay.
So I was in some like academic clubs, like Vietnamese Student Body Association in high school, but generally have been very reserved. So I think this is, you know, for most people that know me, this is an interesting endeavor, because, like I said, I was just like the quiet sort of software engineer for sort of most of my adult life. You know? I enjoy being around friends, and I like to like sort of socialize, mm-hmm. in small groups. But, you know, I also am very proud of being from San Jose and a part of San Jose, sort of showing. And I continue to do it, you know, with people that I meet, particularly, sort of mild segue. But, you know, now that we're buying more wine and we're able to carry products that traditionally aren't able to be found in the South Bay.
Yeah.
I'm always urging, you know, my sort of North Bay, East Bay winemaker friends to like come out and check out San Jose, because there's great community here. There's people that want these products,
yeah,
and they're willing to seek it out.
Yeah,
they just need a space to have it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But to go back to that question, you know, in the past year, it's really invigorated me around being part of the community. Mm-hmm. You know, Run Club is a huge thing. I've met so many people that, you know, some of them have never even been to the bar, right? Which is amazing. I actually really love that. Like, to see people that have heard about us through friends or other friends or run groups. They may not even drink wine, you know, but that's totally cool, just to have other people come downtown,
mm-hmm.
and on a Monday afternoon when it's typically, you know, more vacant.
Yeah.
Like, that's really heartwarming.
Yeah.
Comedy is another one. You know, my friend Sebastian Wong, who performs at the Improv, helps us host sort of a monthly. We try to do it pretty regularly, but generally every monthly stand-up sort of comedy show with a lot of local up-and-coming comics, just to provide a space for them to, you know, work on their craft. And that's been nice, just to get people an intimate setting to do comedy for 22 people.
And are those kind of connections that, because, you know, there's like Anson that's running the Run Club. You said Sebastian, who's doing comedy. Were those connections that you kind of had prior to opening up, or was the bar kind of a conduit for bringing those people in?
Yeah, no, it's definitely the latter. Like, those relationships, like, it's, you know, again, when you ask me that question, it reminds me of like sort of the power of just human connection and meeting people. Like, I met Anson a year before we opened the shop when we were doing a pop-up at Original Gravity.
Yeah.
So our friends, you know, Dan and George, who owned the space, when I was sort of in the works of opening up a spot, they were gracious enough to let me host a pop-up there.
Yeah.
And sort of serve some of my natural wine that I had at the time, and just sort of gauge demand. I had met Anson there. And, you know, he's been a friend and sort of a patron ever since. Found out he runs a lot.
Yeah, a lot.
And so, yeah, he's helped me sort of figure out that space, reach out to other clubs around this, you know, around the area. And so that's been fantastic. And then Sebastian, you know, I've met through jiu-jitsu, which is another huge part of this sort of transition into my latter part of life and this business.
So I read a little bit about that, like kind of the importance of martial arts and jiu-jitsu, which is something that was that's relatively new in your life, right? Like you started taking that on kind of during COVID.
Towards the end of COVID.
So that was after you kind of left the tech space.
It was like right at the end. There was a little bit. I did start when I was still working at Apple. But yeah, you know, I would say that that part has been very transformative for me.
And it was, it wasn't just you, right? Like you and your wife, Anne, were started going to classes or like
everyone
what was
started before me. So, you know, the story goes, so my brother-in-law, Brian, he had been training jiu-jitsu for a decade. Around that, maybe more. Anyways, he was training for a long time. And as our kids were growing up and we're looking for other activities to put them in, he suggested to Ann that we put the kids in jiu-jitsu. And it sounded like a great thing, sort of, you know, self-defense, sort of grappling, seemed great for the kids. And so she took them to class and sort of they joined. And then she sort of caught the bug and she joined. And this, again, was during the height of me being at home and working sort of all hours of the day. And it just kind of exacerbated because they would be gone training in the evening and I just work more. And that was sort of the start of the downward spiral of working too much. But anyways, one day they had convinced me, very against my willingness to go and try. Again, being the introvert, you know, just not wanting to put yourself out there. I tried a class and, you know, guess what? I got hooked.
So
it was sort of transformative, life-changing. I was immediately drawn to how difficult it was. And it, in some ways, resonated with, like, my desire to, like, troubleshoot and, like,
because it is a very technically based martial art, right?
100%.
Like folks that don't necessarily understand the strategy and the technique might not be able to tap into that, but like every move has like a consequence and a reaction.
Like people that practice jiu-jitsu a lot, and again, I'm no expert. I mean, I've only been training for, I forget, 3 or 4 years.
And this is something that you're still practicing?
Yeah. I try to train pretty much every day that they offer lunch class, which is 4 days a week. So
awesome.
That's why the podcast is today. It's the only day I don't train at lunch. So
awesome.
But yeah, you know, it's I've learned so much discipline through jiu-jitsu. It's, like I said, it's human chess. Sort of every reaction has N number of counters that someone can do, and vice versa. So it's this constant, like, mental but physical game. But I think it's something great because having started later in life, it's a sport that, you know, you don't purely have to rely on strength. And the strength will only get you so far typically, right? And that's something that I've had to learn even over the past couple of years of like, you know, there's ways to get out of positions. You just can't bench press someone all the time.
Totally.
You know, and typically doing things like that will lead you in
and leave your arm out straight. Yeah,
basically, you're gonna get arm barred or something like that. So, but jiu-jitsu has been fantastic, not only to sort of make our family closer, you know, because you know my wife and she trains, you know, at different times, but she trains, the kids train, I train, and so. It's funny because we're often at the gym. One of us is at the gym like twice a day.
Yeah.
But, you know, it has its own community, which I've have learned to gravitate towards. And a lot of that has helped me in business. I think the people that I've met, particularly in jiu-jitsu, have a much more go-getter attitude because you're literally, you know, doing face-to-face combat with somebody.
Yeah.
And so these are not typically people that are shying away from stress and confrontation and things like that. And it's really helped me sort of as a business owner, you know, kind of wake up and sort of handle the day,
sort of,
you know. And so there's countless things that I could say about jiu-jitsu that's helped change my life, you know, for the better. As well.
So, you know, a lot of this kind of that you're sharing, do you feel like opening this wine bar, Good Time Wine Bar, is kind of like, I don't know, it seems like a kind of movement from that kind of introversion that you kind of like viewed yourself as, which I mean, it's just a part of part of you. But it seems like that's kind of been like a big move towards, I don't know, like this new.
Yeah, you know, I would say, you know, that person is still there. You know,
yeah.
I definitely like to be at home and like hanging out with my kids and just, you know, watch a movie and eat popcorn and kind of do the family thing. I think I've learned to enjoy sort of meeting people. And, you know, one of the main reasons that I opened the bar was sort of to seek more this human connection. I think I was finding that obviously in tech when we were in the office, but as we began to be more remote, oddly enough, some people enjoy that a lot. You know, I had a lot of young engineers that were working for me. You know, when you're in your 20s, it felt like they loved working from home because they could like sign on, you know, kind of do their work, and then they just like
disappear,
you know, disappear and do whatever they wanted. But
yeah.
It wasn't like that for me. And so, you know, the bar in a way was an outlet for me to sort of have this human connection.
Yeah.
Like we wouldn't be here chatting right now. I wouldn't have met you at the wine, at the run club if it wasn't otherwise, you know? And so, when you sort of think about these moments and how you piece them together, it's kind of amazing to be able to see it in that light, you know? And so, you know, am I an extrovert at this point? No, definitely not, you know? I thought many times before walking in the door if I should show up. but you know, you kind of get over it. And that, again, that goes back to jiu-jitsu. It's like I train, you know, I try to train like 4 days a week. I generally never want to go still. It's kind of the inner like sort of battle you have. Like I don't wake up going like I want to go to jiu-jitsu today. I never regret it.
Yeah.
I never regret going to a class, and I feel like 10 times better after I go. And you know, I'm an old enough adult to know like I need to go, and that's what, you know, is good for me.
Yeah.
But it's this constant inner battle that you have, you know. I think we all sort of have these moments when you get up, it's like you don't want to do this, but
we've even chatted about it at Run Club, right? You've mentioned like,
oh, you see me on some Mondays, and I'm like,
I wouldn't be here without you guys. Exactly. And I have to tell myself too, I'm like, well, this Run Club's not gonna happen if I don't show up.
Yeah.
So
that's kind of like, you know, there's been more than one occasion, you know, someone has told me like, you got to show up, you know, and it's great, you know. And I kind of sometimes it's jokingly, you know, but yeah, I know, like, it means a lot to be there and to connect with people. Mm-hmm. And so, and again, and I never regret running after.
Totally.
You know, and it's a great thing. Yeah. So, but it's a work in progress. You know, I think every day is kind of like, you know, you ebb and flow.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes you meet a lot of people, like on the weekends and it's fantastic. And then sometimes you just need sort of, you need a breather a little bit and then
recharge the battery,
get back at it. Yeah,
totally.
But it's been an amazing year meeting countless people and kind of looking forward to meeting more people.
Yeah. So recentering on Good Time Bar, what's in a name? What kind of went into?
Oh, that's my wife.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, so.
And so it's also important to state too, right? Like this is a joint ownership of you and your wife.
Oh yeah, no, it's definitely in some ways.
It's probably you know more her. there would be no Good Time Bar without Anne for sure.
She's behind many things that people see, sort of at the bar.
Yeah.
You know, she sells her sort of full-time day job. She's helping shoulder a lot of the work with our children and our family. And so she's not always there sort of physically at the bar, but everything that goes into the bar, she's very much a part of.
Yeah.
Right. And so when you're seeing the design aesthetics, you're seeing menu, food that we're serving, how people are experiencing the bar when they're there. A lot of that is things that, you know, she has put time and effort into sort of helping curate.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the name really came from her. I think she was just, you know, when we thought about what kind of space did we want, we just wanted, as weird as it sounds, we just wanted a place where people would have a good time, right? Just come and hang out, drink wine, sort of, you know, sit on the alley on a nice sunny day,
yeah,
read a book. And so that goes back to a lot of the design aesthetic that we try to put in the bar. The lounge space is very intentional. Like we wanted a space where you could cozy up on a Sunday and read a book.
Yeah.
Right. When we had initially designed the space, as an example, our design team that we worked with, fantastic folks from Studio KDA, they had designed sort of high bar top stools. Mm-hmm. Being a dad with two children, you know, we wanted a space that felt welcoming to families, because I'm in that category. If I want to go and drink a couple of glasses of wine on a Sunday,
yeah,
you know, and stroll around the city or other places, it's kind of unwelcoming if you walk in and there's no sort of kid-friendly space, right?
Yeah.
You kind of feel like you can't be there. And so we sort of made it a point to have sort of low seating, a lounge space, a patio ideally, which we do have. And so there's a lot of thought and intention around the space.
Yeah.
And all that is hopefully encompasses experience in the name, where people come and enjoy themselves without too much pretension.
Totally.
Yeah. There you go.
And that's that's kind of the natural wine bar kind of scene, right? It's almost kind of like a counterculture to like traditional wine in a lot of ways. Back to you, right? You mentioned reading a book on a Sunday.
Yeah.
I know you're quite busy with your jiu-jitsu and everything else. Are you reading anything? Is there anything that's like like interesting to you?
My aunt would laugh at this. I'm not a huge... I'm an audiobook person. One, because I probably have some version of like ADD with reading. And so it's very... traditionally been very hard for me to sit down and sort of read a book.
Yeah. Well, audiobooks count. I mean, we count those. So
what I'm listening, this random, it really has nothing to do with work or anything, but one of my customers that come in, shout out to Michael, he told me about this book called Never Split the Difference. It's a negotiation book.
Okay.
I just found it interesting. It really has, I'm not really applying it to like work or anything like that, but he's sort of this FBI negotiator.
Yeah.
Writes a book, applies it to business and a bunch of other stuff. But
interesting.
It's what I'm listening to right now.
Right.
But it's just so, my wife is, she's going to laugh at this. She's like, he doesn't even know how to read, probably. my family's a reader.
Yeah.
So, and, yeah, my wife, she reads a ton.
Both my girls love to read.
Awesome.
So I'm like the lone person that's like not always having their head in a book reading at home. So. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned family, family, friends, business partners, whatever.
Sure.
What do you think are a couple words that they would use to describe you?
Jeez, I don't know, man. It depends on when they catch me.
hopefully generous, hopefully fun to be around. Hopefully those are the two things that, like, at least I try to carry myself in terms of being thoughtful about, you know, the time I spend with people, trying to be present. I think that's definitely become a little more difficult in this past year.
Yeah.
I think sort of being at the bar and sort of in some ways being the face of the bar.
Yeah.
It's, you know, time and attention and sort of meeting people has been fantastic. But at times, you know, when you have to talk to a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
at the Run Club, as an example, like I'd love to talk to everybody, you know, and it's just not always possible every week. So you kind of try to split time, but you know, I try to be thoughtful and have a lot of intention when I'm conversating with people. And, I want to make sure people feel that they're appreciated, you know, when they're talking to me and when they're coming to visit the bar. So
awesome.
That's probably the two words I would think, hopefully.
Great. Well, so, you know, we've got you in here. Y'all have a 1-year anniversary coming up at the end of the month.
Indeed.
What do y'all have planned for the 1 year?
Yeah, that's, you know, I think it's early April, so we're definitely in the planning phase still.
Mm-hmm.
Last year we started with a big bang.
We had an all day party. It was a 12-hour party from noon to midnight. So we're gonna do, you know, definitely something to one up that. We're definitely gonna have a lot of the people who have helped us make Good Time Bar what it is over the past year,
mm-hmm.
back, whether it's DJs or winemakers or people that just have meant a lot to us in helping create the space.
Mm-hmm.
So really, hopefully, mostly all day celebration.
Awesome.
That's going to sort of span on the alley,
mm-hmm.
And in the shop, and, you know, feature foods that we're excited about, wines that I'm really excited about. And music and other sort of creative folks that I've enjoyed working with over the past year.
Yeah.
Have them back for a big celebration.
Yeah.
So, looking forward to it.
And then one last thing, you know, you're a year in here.
Yeah.
What are a couple big takeaways, or what advice would you give to somebody now that you're kind of a year back, if somebody was opening up a business on day one?
Don't open. It's much more work
could ever imagine, but it's way more fulfilling too. I think the number of hours I think I've put in and being at the bar, like I just left the bar to come here, has been more than I could count, literally. But all the people that I've met and all the people that have been grateful for a place that they feel welcomed at,
mm-hmm.
and really feel is kind of like a real comfortable space where they can come and have fun. We have so many regulars now that have really become almost family, you know. Some have become good friends, which is fantastic, and it's something I never envisioned to start off with.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say if you have an interesting idea and you have aspirations to do it, to go for it. And cause you know, places like downtown San Jose need more creative minds, folks that are willing to sort of walk on the edge and do things. Cause that's the only way we're going to turn things around down here.
That's awesome. So. Right on. Well, if you want to share where folks can find out more about Good Time Bar, I mean, Instagram.
Sure. Yeah, you can follow us on Instagram. It's at Good Time Bar SJ, or you can find us on our website at goodtimebarsj.com.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sitting down with us and talking, Stephen. So good to learn more about you and what you got going on.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Content Magazine podcast. Follow us on social media at Content Mag. Become a member and help us to continue to tell the stories of the South Bay creatives. This episode's music is 408 by Jack Pavlina. Follow him on Spotify and also on his Instagram at Jack Pavlina Music.